I don't know.
I think it's just screenshots. I think it's gone.
Damn.
I know.
Anyone who leaves up their tweet from that sort of within in that sort of scenario is a legend. You have to give us the content.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's one thing that Kevin Durant has going for him is he all of those old tweets are still up.
Yeah, I mean that's amazing.
I respect that so much.
The best thing about his like early good tweets are that they weren't from high school or college. They were like his third year in the NBA.
Yeah.
Story titles.
Yeah, they're like, "Damn, I want her." Tweet is like literally exactly
46 that day.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Full Court Mess. It is May 4th, 2022. We're recording at 6.03 p.m. Pacific time. It's a round two of playoffs. Basketball, NBA, blah, blah, blah. Things happen. I'm Jared.
I'm Will, and we are still sponsored by Coca-Cola Starlight because I still haven't had one, but now we're also adding Dr. Pepper Dark Berry to the list of potential options.
And our guest, Adam Davis, is back. Adam, how do you feel about Dr. Pepper Dark Berry?
I have not tried it. It sounds delicious. Dr. Pepper is one of the only sodas I really drink, so.
There's a reason we have Adam on, folks. He's just going to pound good takes start to finish.
This is a really good start, actually.
Yeah. And what do you got there, Jared?
No, go ahead.
I just I figured I could start off us off with a question for Adam. This is the one that's been on my mind. I wanted to get Adam. The Celtics are damn near title favorites. After the first round series, the trendy pick I saw amongst making the rounds with Celtics in five. I'm curious, did you after game one have any hesitation, or did you stay locked in with your Celtics brethren on Celtics in five and say just a blip, we're fine. The beating the Nets was too easy, so the Bucks were a bit of a culture shock.
I was worried. I'm still like not. I would pick the Celtics, but I'm also biased, so I don't know how much that matters. But I'm definitely not confident. Like the Nets series, even with KD and Kyrie, I was pretty confident start to finish. And
yeah.
I probably would have picked the Nets to win a game or two. But the Bucks, I was never expecting us to sweep or probably even win in five games. So.
Gotcha. Then, well, one, I'm sorry for putting other people's words in your mouth. That's unsanitary. But I got to say, I mean, when watching, or as I'm a bigger fan of doing, pretending to watch this team, they seem like, I mean, these are basically my title favorites at this point. Maybe I've got the Suns doing their thing and coming out, especially with Booker back, but. I mean, Tatum's unstoppable. The defense seems to be like all time greats. Like, do you think there's a better team left in the playoffs?
I still think the Suns have earned the right to be the favorite, if not like co favorites. I'd probably list them as the favorite.
Okay.
No, the Celtics, whatever the stat is for the whole second half of the season where they were also the number one offense or something, whatever time frame it was, I still just have some doubts about the offense. And it wasn't a problem against the Nets, but both, even the game we just won, it hasn't been necessarily something I'm thinking is like, oh, this is for sure championship level. And most teams, even the Suns, don't have Giannis and Brooke and Drew Holiday. So,
yeah. Individual matchups is probably not going to get harder. Although your reward for winning the series would be like Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and perhaps like Kyle Lowry. So I guess it could still be pretty damn annoying.
Yeah. Well, I would still be worried about playing the Heat. Even I'd pick the Celtics to win that in six, probably two, six or seven, because they have home court. But I don't know. I'm still any team that I think can like run our offense into the mud still has a chance, even if we're doing the same to them.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. And then I want to throw this Celtics take at you. I prepared you a little bit for it. I know I've sent it to you already, but I want to hear the response. You got to kind of, take your time with it before. My Boston take is that they are very, very good, but that the Jays are overtouted and Smart's defense is way overtouted. And the reality is their 3-7 guys are the best in the league and their synergy is outstanding. Do I think Jason Tatum is emerging as a top five NBA player right now? Absolutely not. Do I think the Celtics are a terrifying championship contender? Absolutely. Do I think Smart is the fifth best defender on his own damn team? Yes. Yes, I do. What stands out to you there? I know it stands out to me. What stands out as the person who actually knows the Boston Celtics?
I definitely don't think Smart is the fifth best on the Celtics.
That part is such a reach.
Yeah. I think he is their best defender overall.
You think it's not a coincidence that a bunch of other media people watched him and said this is the best defensive player in the NBA?
Yeah. And even before the voting for that, everyone was like, oh, well, is it him or Rob? And then I think it was notable that like Rob got like 2 third place votes or something.
Yeah, you probably got to give, I mean, love Rob to death, but even with that, you probably got to give more respect to the guy who, you know, plays all of the games.
Yeah. It's really tough to rate the Celtics defenders because, I mean, Derek White or Grant Williams are probably like five, six or seven, and Grant Williams is like now the Kevin Durant and Giannis stopper.
And the Celtics just take guys with that body type and turn them into Giannis stoppers.
Yeah.
He was born to be Al Horford on defense.
Yeah, I see that.
He's like what we wanted Gershon Yabusele to be and what we wanted Semi Ojeleye to be. And now we're like, yes, got him.
You know, I still follow Yabu on Twitter, and I'm reminded of this every so often when I get a random French retweet of some overseas basketball league. But that keeps me at least somewhat connected to his tremendous ass, and I hope he's doing well.
That answered my question of where he is.
Yeah, I don't know where he plays now.
See if I'll get the team, but pretty damn certain he's in Europe. Yeah, he plays for Real Madrid. So he's in the second best league in the world.
All right.
I wonder what that's like to be like a legitimate NBA draft pick who played in the NBA and like all you're going to be remembered for is like jokes about your ass.
I mean, he's clearly still going for it because he's 6'8", listed as 6'8", 271 on Google. So I'm guessing nothing has changed. If y'all, for any time fan, newer fans, we have an all-time tweet from Adam Davis that I'm just going to grab out of memory here. It's Yabu is 260 pounds and all of it is muscle or ass. From a few years ago when he was still on the Boston Celtics. I got Twitter recommended to me in my In Case You Missed It section back in the day when that was happening. Mm-hmm. So I'll always have that.
That's
one.
That's not a thing. Thank God you did ask like it. That. You can't miss it.
So I was just, I also, besides the Smart stuff, I was kind of curious about the Celtics. Smart and both Jays are overrated, but the Celtics have the best 3-7 guys in the league. One part that immediately stands out to me is that either Smart or one of the Jays has to be in that 3-7 group, by definition. Yes,
true.
Which then the best in the league, so that seems a little odd to me. But two, I love Rob, but I mean, and maybe this is unfair because it's like before the Celtics playing well, but like, do you think like if you sit down on paper and go to anybody and say, hey, like which guys, like which 3-7 you take in the league, they're like, I don't feel like we're going to get some unanimous response from the voices of the world, even if they are the best. Like, I don't feel like everyone's sitting around going, oh yeah, man, give me Derek White and Grant Williams all day over whoever anyone else's like number five option is.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't stand out to me that way. I think our starting five is like all on that level, but like, yeah, as good as Grant has been in the playoffs and was all season, I still don't think he's like far and away one of the best bench players. And yeah. Derek White has hit, I think, two shots since he got to Boston.
It reminds me of like when you get guys who are just like, it's just like the classic guys playing on really competent teams. Like you're watching the Suns and people are like, wow, how did we let them get campaign and Bismack Biyombo? And it's like, no one would say that if they weren't just playing with really good players. Like these guys are playing with an MVP level Jason Tatum.
Derek White is pretty divisive on Celtics Twitter because there are people who are just like, this guy can't shoot and sucks. And there are people who think that like, it doesn't matter if he never hits a shot ever. Like he's just such a good defender and like such a smart player, which like, I think he is, but not at some point. I'm like, okay, you need to hit a shot.
Yeah, I mean, no one's that good of a defender.
Because I truly expect every shot he takes right now to be a miss. And that's definitely kind of hurting us. That's part of why I'm still worried about our offense.
Do you think every team has a Derek White in that way? That's like every fan of that team sees him shoot and it's like he's missing that.
Yeah, but we already...
Is there a team out there that lacks that?
Or, on the flip side, which team has the most guys that fit that?
Okay, yeah.
That's a tough question.
I'm trying to run through. Is there anybody on the Sacramento Kings, when they shoot, you think it's going in?
That when they shoot, you think it's going in?
Yeah. I mean, if it's close enough to the hoop, I'll take Sabonis.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say like Sabonis, but I don't know if that counts.
Harrison Barnes is a good player, but he's literally got the opposite reputation ever since the blown 3-1 lead.
Yeah. Who? Let me double check this roster because they did trade like half it away.
Yeah, I'm also kind of like, who else is even on the Kings at this point?
So,
De'Aaron Fox, right now, off night.
Yeah. Their like main shooter is like Justin Holiday, and like Jeremy Lamb, as far as I know. Sheesh. Yeah, I don't know who would take that shot, and I'd be like, that I'd feel more confident in it going in than missing.
Yeah, but I think they're falling in the sweet spot of. I'm not thinking that it's going in, but I'm also not really thinking it's missing. The more I think about it more, it's got to be the Lakers have the most of those guys. I mean, I've mm-hmm. loved Russ his entire career, but I mean, if that man takes a three, I'm dead certain it's missing.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Russ is like the superstar archetype of that player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only one that would be more is Ben Simmons, and he won't take the shot, so.
Yeah, so that he's disqualified.
Feel like Julius Randle is a pretty good one for if we're looking for good players.
Oh yeah, that's
his turn on Julius Randle was.
It's been a nasty 365 days for him. He literally got, I guess maybe that's New York, but he literally got 1 year of being a fun story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fun story for the rest of us.
Adam, is he getting traded this offseason?
I don't have any insider info, so.
Pretend like you do.
Use the sources right now. Yeah, just give us your own take. Like a Christmas card.
I think they'll look to probably not like go out of their way to attach a pick or something, I wouldn't think, but I'm sure they're not going out of their way to keep him.
Does he usually play power for them, or does he play center
for them? Power.
Yeah.
Power.
They've got Mitchell and Nerlens at center when they're healthy.
Right.
Circling all the way back. Adam, who's the other guy on the Celtics who when he shoots it, you know it's not going in?
Well, Marcus Smart, basically the same guy, where like you know the numbers say it's not none of them are good shots.
I feel like he's like that's interesting because I feel like he's managed to reform his reputation. Like he had that year, was it last year, where he just started hitting like 36% from three or something like that. And now it's like I trust him to make like winning plays. So I'm like, oh, if he shoots it in the clutch, he'll probably make it. But that might just be like an opposing fan kind of view.
Yeah, well, I feel like
even anecdotally, if you watched him, and like I watch a lot of Celtics games, and I would be like, this guy's shooting like 45, 38, 90. And then you look at the stats and it's like nowhere close to that. So I don't I don't know where the numbers are coming from. But it is like, when he has bad games, it is like 1 for 12. And so that helps.
He's like a guy to me. Whenever I watch a Celtics game, he's the guy that like all the good shots are misses, and then these crazy stupid ass shots that are like clutch as hell, they're all makes every time.
I view him as there's a specific like genre of player for me. And he doesn't fit into it perfectly because I like Marcus Smart, but it's usually somebody I don't like. But the way it works is it's usually a certain guy on one of my least favorite teams. So my example would be like, this isn't the perfect example, but I'm going to grab RJ Barrett when he was at Duke. It's the guy like on the Duke teams, maybe Trevor Keels this year, where when they start to shoot the three, I'm like, yeah, let him take them. And then they always hit them against my team. And I'm like, this is horseshit. Or they always hit them in a big spot. So I'm like, I didn't want, not that he was killing it, but I didn't really want Cam Reddish to be given an open three when he was at Duke. But it was like when RJ Barrett got it, I was like, and plus RJ Barrett was usually taking like dribble pull-ups, they weren't that good a shot, and I was like, yeah, you can do it. But then he hits a clutch one and you're like, I want to kill myself. That's Marcus Smart to me, except that I like Marcus Smart. I'm like, yeah, let him shoot, and then I just feel like an ass because he hits four against my team, and I'm like, well, all right, theoretically that was sound.
I feel that. That makes sense.
Also, I want to give a some voice to the most recent installment of the Wizards Celtics rivalry. The only part of it that still burns for me is that Celtics fans believe, and they are a much higher profile franchise. So I understand this, but Celtics fans seem to believe that Jeff Green kills the Celtics more than he kills anyone else. I personally hold that the Wizards have been talking about Jeff Green, Wizards killer, for even longer than that. So I am kind of wondering if he's literally considered a killer of every team. Like, which teams is he sucking against if every team is scared of him? But that's my only personal tie back to Celtics beef, is that I want Jeff Green remembered as a Wizards killer, even though it's completely losing battle because we don't matter enough to kill.
Well, when he goes into the Hall of Fame, he'll go in with the Wizards killer jersey. Jersey.
That's just all I needed. Thank you.
Other than Chris Middleton, who it's the same thing in that case, where even in this series, I'm like, Giannis is the best player in the world, but he does not scare me as much as Chris Middleton does. Because year after year, he's shot like 65% against us for entire playoffs.
That is one of the most fascinating, and I love it because, you know, like, well, one, because as a semi-neutral observer, it's hilarious. But two, like, you know, like, anytime you're watching a game or something like that, and a guy's hot for a first half, and somebody does like, oh, like, well, he has to cool off. You got the answer is always like, I mean, nothing is unsustainable for one game. Like, you can sustain anything for a game. But it is hysterical to me that now Chris Middleton is doing this over a sample size of, like, I don't know, like, what is it at this point? Like, 35 games?
It's something like that.
He's like the best shooter in history, specifically when playing Celtics, and it's so amazing. So this really might be the year with him out. This really might be the all everything aligning for the Celtics.
It could be. I mean, Embiid is beat up. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Bam Adebayo is a registered Republican.
Is he?
I thought he
what?
That actually.
That's I just say it because it's a such a constant Sam Sheehan bit.
Okay. Okay. Right. And you scared me for a second. Also, we have Joe, we have comments from Joe. He said, I heard y'all were talking about Yabu's Yabuns.
Does Joe have Joe, if you're out there, do you have a Yabu basketball card? Just let us know at some point.
And also, if you do, what kind of pose is he hitting on that thing?
I still have a Yabu t-shirt.
That's oh, just hell yes.
Him.
Let me see. I'm gonna grab, this is a exclusive for the live viewers. This won't help the recording listeners at all, but this is your treat for tuning in. I'm scrolling back and I'm gonna grab my zoomed in pictures of Yabu's ass when I watched him play in the Dean Dome in a preseason game. The old days, but it'll take a second, so feel free to keep the pod going.
Let's see. A lot of we could order some coaching news, I guess. Coach search news.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers are interested. Oh, that thing is present.
There it is.
He's got the wagon on. I got one. Most of them aren't very good shots, but he sticks that thing out. He knows he's got it.
That thing is there.
Love him. All right. Keep it up, Jared.
Okay. Apparently Lakers want Quinn Snyder. We'll see. I don't know. It's interesting, at the very least. Reports are saying that the Kings, let me find it, are narrowing down their finalists for their coaching search. One finalist that seems to be a favorite of the majority owner of the Kings is Mark Jackson. He's made it through. Personally, I'm kind of hoping they hire him at this point, because then I just don't have to watch their games at all. They're also local to me. I get both local stations. I get Warriors and Kings, and I'm like, oh, Kings are playing. No, I'm not gonna watch them if they hire this man. I don't have to.
I'm still praying for the chance the Lakers do.
That would be.
It doesn't seem like it's really in the cards at all anymore, but I would give anything for it.
So let's. I was sent this thread about we'll call it Mark Jackson's greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
Since last episode, we went over one of his greatest hits of the surprise blessing to Steph Curry's ankle. This thread is from Alex Wolf. Thank you, Alex Wolf. This is from 2 years ago, also, when he made this thread when Mark Jackson was interviewing for the Knicks. There's reasons why Knicks fans should not want this. Reason number one, Mark Jackson, as a player at age 37, staged a coup against future Hall of Famer John Stockton in Utah to try to take the starting job. Not going to read the whole thing, but Reason two. Despite his status as a preacher and born-again Christian, Jackson had an affair with a stripper and was extorted over nude photos that said mistress had in her possession. Jackson offered little to no remorse for his actions.
Well, we knew he was horny, and we knew that from live
TV. Yeah, that was no surprise to anyone.
Quote from him, "I recognize the extremely poor judgment that I used in having an affair 6 years ago, including the embarrassing communication I exhibited during that time, and in attempting to deal with the extortion scheme at first by myself. I made some egregious errors. I apologize for any embarrassment I may have caused my family, friends, and of course the Warriors." Jackson, a minister, then quoted the Bible saying, "What goes on in the dark comes out in the light."
Great quote to pick if you could only pick one for this scenario.
Right. Reason number three is the taking Steph Curry to church story we went over before. Reason number four, Warriors owner Joe Lacob stated after firing Jackson that everyone in the Warriors organization hated him, as in 200-plus employees. Quote from Lacob, "Part of it was that he couldn't get along with anyone else in the organization. And look, he did a great job, and I'll always compliment him in any respects. But you can't have 200 people in an organization not like you." Joe Lacob hinted at Jackson's icy relationship with the majority of the organization when he fired the coach, telling Tim Kawakami of Mercury News, "Look, I don't think we should go into the great details of what did happen other than to say that this is the decision that was based on what was good for the organization as a whole. And when I say the organization as a whole, I don't mean just the team and just the 15 players that are involved in the coaching staff. I mean everyone. There's 200 employees here. So when we look at the organization going forward and the kind of coach we want, not just the performance, but everything else, all these factors matter. We took all that account."
I love saying that after you say that you'll only compliment him.
Right. Right. Reason five. Jackson insisted that Jerry West, architect of the current Warriors powerhouse, stay away from practices.
Jerry West is just constantly getting owned.
Really is.
Banned from the Lakers, getting banned by Mark Jackson, getting owned in HBO's Winning Time. He catches a lot of L's for being a legend, for being the logo of the NBA.
Truly does. And then via... All these tweets also have sources for the articles, so we'll retweet the thread that can all be found. But via Grantland, it says, "What are you saying?"
It said only facts here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Jackson made a show of firing Scalabrine in front of players and other coaches, but he had no real grounds, and the front office made Jackson find a compromise, per a source familiar with the matter, demoting Scalabrine to the D League. In addition, Jackson has asked that Jerry West, a high-level advisor in Golden State, not attend most practices and team activities, sources say. Reason number six. Former Cavs GM David Griffin once flatly refused to hire Jackson, even when Jackson was LeBron's preferred coaching candidate. Griffin opposed King James, "That's how bad Jackson is." And then from Yahoo Sports, "In the end, here is a problem for Clutch Sports' original plan. Cleveland refused to hire Jackson. General manager David Griffin is too well-connected in the NBA, too knowledgeable of the truth inside Jackson's Warriors regime to let that happen. So much of Griffin's job has been to manage the constant demands of James Camp and of Dan Gilbert. As much as anything, his job has been to bridge the chaos above and below him." That one's not too exciting, honestly, but here's a good one. Reason seven, Jackson once told the Warriors that the then-injured center, Festus Ezeli, was cheering for them to lose so Ezeli would look good if they started winning when he returned. The players confronted Ezeli on the accusations, bringing him to tears. That's a bad one. That's believable, too. I believe that.
What's jumping out to me from that one is I would not have known until this moment that Festus Ezeli was on the Warriors when Mark Jackson was there.
Oh, yeah, he was.
I just thought he was a legend for grabbing random game 7 minutes in the NBA Finals and taking incredibly blurry photos.
That's fair.
So great that tweet is still up. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I really appreciate that from him. Anyone who just like, wait, I guess I only ever see the screenshot. I was going to compliment Terry Rozier, but is the Osama bin Laden should have hooped tweet still up, or is it just screenshots we have at this point?
I don't know.
I think it's just screenshots. I think it's gone.
Damn.
I know.
Anyone who leaves up their tweet from that sort of in that sort of scenario is a legend. You have to give us the content.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's one thing that Kevin Durant has going for him is he all of those old tweets are still up.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
I respect that so much.
The best thing about his like early good tweets are that they weren't from high school or college. They were like his third year in the NBA.
Yeah.
Scoring titles.
Yeah, they're like, damn, I want her tweet is like literally like, he was in the league.
46
yeah.
That day.
Okay, we have a few more to go through here. Let's hope they get a little bit spicy. Reason number 8.
Phobia yet.
Oh yeah, I don't even know if that's like on going to be on here. We'll see. Reason 8. Jackson's assistants constantly looked to undermine him. Darren Erman felt the need to record locker room banter, and the extremely affable Brian Scalabrine refused to speak to or even be near Jackson. And that's like, there's a whole ass ESPN article about that I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's a lot there. But I mean, we've heard those stories before. Reason 9. Continuing on from last tweet, Jackson publicly trashed Erman and Scalabrine after he was fired. Those were his handpicked assistants that he insisted on rolling with despite management wanting him to hire better ones. some quotes here. Some quotes here. That one was demoted, talking about Scalabrine. I would have handled it 6 weeks, a month, 2 months earlier. The things that took place from his side, I would have nipped it at the bud initially. That's my fault for allowing it to go on. I'm pretty much a guy, just like ministry. I try to show you a different way of handling it. Hope that seeing me handle your disrespect, you'll come around and realize this isn't the way to handle it. Fortunately for me, it works for a lot of folks. There are some folks that just won't get it, and you have to handle them differently. I would do that differently. As far as assistants, you have to pick people who are loyal and dedicated. It's inexcusable what that second assistant, talking about Erman, did. That cannot be tolerated. For folks to say two situations, it's obviously documented that they both were 100% wrong. The only fault I got is hiring those guys. I would use wisdom and who is around me. Reason 10. Jackson used a sermon at his church to publicly blast Warriors owner Joe Lacob after he was fired. Not much to that one. 11. This is a good one. I think this might be my favorite one. Jackson once used his announcing gig with ESPN to throw Richard Jefferson under the bus on national television. And then, quote, Jeff Van Gundy says, "Don't talk about what you need to do to win. Do what you need to do to win." Richard Jefferson, great loose ball play guy. All right, great loose ball play and has always been terrific finish on the break. And then Mark Jackson says, "Guy's a pro, stays ready, played for me in Golden State, cost us a series in San Antonio, missing 2 free throws, but I'm not holding on to that. Still has plenty of the tank and playing at a high level for this Cavaliers team."
But he's not holding on to that, at least.
The one, honestly, shockingly, I feel like the one I'm really stuck on, and it's for one specific reason, is the first one where he's staging a coup against John Stockton. It's because, given what we know of both of them now, I can't picture two people having an argument more where I couldn't agree with either side.
Right. Like, I think of that, and I'm like, oh, he must have been ahead of the curve. But I'm like, but he's what's never... his own curve? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like, I know I won't be agreeing with Stockton's insane, but I know Mark Jackson's not gonna say anything. So it's incredible that they can be diametrically opposed and still be completely removed from what I would think as well. But I would like to know what Mark Jackson thinks about Stockton's claims that athletes are dying every day from the COVID vaccine mid-game.
I would like to hear about that.
I'm curious his take on it, because that might be their common ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, here we go.
The other guys in the locker room.
Oh boy. Oh boy. 12. When asked if he would consider bringing on Jason Collins, the NBA's first openly gay player, Jackson apparently tersely responded, "Not in my locker room."
What year was that?
Looks like 2014, I think. That's when the article came out from SF Bay. After someone joked about signing of former Warriors assistant coach Scalabrine to a 10-day contract, Collins' name was brought up. Jackson, according to a search closer to the team, responded tersely, "Not in my locker room." Jackson's remarks are the latest and strongest indication that his intolerant attitude towards gays was grossly out of step with the progressive Bay Area and views held by the Warriors management.
Did Mark Jackson ever coach Rajon Rondo? Have they gotten a chance to team up in the past?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. We should get that once. See if it unlocks a new level or something.
It might. Regarding last tweet, the validity of that one is so-so since Jackson allegedly said that to reporters, and it was only reported months after that, said he did come, or he did say that he was praying for Collins after he came out, so it's definitely believable. Quote, "As a Christian man, I have beliefs of what's right and what's wrong. That being said, I know Jason Collins, I know his family, and certainly praying for them at this time." New favorite. Reason 13. It's hard to really nail down a source, but honestly, I would not be surprised if Jackson actually thought Harrison Barnes' encore performance was suffering because he was possessed by a demon, from a leak on Reddit, so who knows. But apparently told the team that Harrison Barnes was possessed by a demon, which is why he regressed.
I mean, you can't rule it out.
I believe it.
Can't rule that out. Okay, we're almost done. 14, if Jackson said...
King's organization was currently possessed by a myriad number of demons, then I would honestly be inclined to believe it. So he might be the perfect guy for the job.
Yeah. As him being a new curse that overtakes the others.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah. What I imagine, like, Vivek Ranavive is a demon, and then it's like you bring in Mark Jackson, and then it's like they can't both survive.
Right. One parasite overtakes the other.
Yeah.
Typically. Yeah. Jackson said on air that he believes Steph Curry's hurting the game. We've heard this. 15. It's just 15's boring. 15's just like Steve Kerr took over and took him to another level. 16, personal issues aside, Jackson's Golden State team ranked dead last in passes per game in the 13-14 season. And that's about it. I do want to circle back really quick to the first one, though. I'm just reading this really quick. They say that over a period of weeks, he succeeded in turning several teammates against Stockton by repeatedly remarking that those players would be better off if Jackson were the Jazz's floor leader. Other players rallied around Stockton, who, because of his quiet nature, was vulnerable to locker room politicking. The rift on the Jazz was mended, though not before Stockton's pride had been wounded. Okay. I guess there's not much to it other than he just wanted to coach.
I'm just kind of fascinated on multiple levels. One, in the sense that Stockton supposedly had a quiet nature when the man is stark raving mad now. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Two, that how do you... It seems naturally kind of difficult to convince the all-time assist leader's teammates that he's like doesn't want to share the ball or something. I mean, he must have been really charismatic and good at pulling it off.
Mark Jackson, like second or third all time.
Oh yeah, so it was really like that was his plan for eventually getting to pass Stockton. He's like, I gotta cut him off early if I'm gonna have any chance. I think where I feel worst here for the Kings fans, and, you know, I mean, there are a billion reasons to feel terrible for Kings fans, but there's nothing quite like hiring a coach like this where you know the next 5 years are just a total waste.
Absolutely.
It's one thing to suck. It's another to know you're going to suck for the next 5 years. And it's like, that sounds like they're the Kings. Of course they're going to suck. But like, you're a fan, you can find a lot of ways to find hope. But like when you hire like a terrible GM or a terrible coach, you just have a guarantee that you're going to be garbage for years. And that is just the worst feeling. That is the feeling that gets you to stop watching the sport entirely.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I saw also that like it's just what's the owner's name again?
King's owner. Vivek.
Vivek. It's only Vivek's favorite. Management apparently likes Mike Brown, who is also a finalist.
That's a fascinating organization.
Matt convinced is a much better coach.
Yeah. I think there was another finalist also that I'm trying to... Steve Clifford, also a finalist.
Interesting. I mean...
It's an interesting mix, for sure.
I mean, it's just like the most like uninspiring mix of all time.
Yeah.
But I guess they're like, we really went for it when we hired Luke Walton. So now we got to dial it back and do something reasonable.
Yeah. But I see...
And they fired him while Boogie Cousins had meningitis.
I see why they'd go after Mike Brown, because he's part of a still pretty successful franchise and has good experience. Steve Clifford, we haven't really seen him in a while, right?
He was with the Hornets last? Or was he...
He's a consultant right now with the Nets.
Okay, he might have had a brief stint with the Magic after the Hornets. I can't remember. I was
thinking maybe the Magic.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Maxey just tried to throw a lob to Furkan Korkmaz.
Was it like a lob where like Korkmaz was behind the three-point line and caught it and shot it while still in the air?
No, it was like not really. I mean, I guess maybe it was intended to be dunked, but he caught it and then tried to lay it up and in and missed. But it was just the most uninspiring alley-oop attempt I've ever seen.
I've got a Sixers question for us on the subject. Okay. Did both teams lose the Harden-Simmons trade?
You know, in a way, I'm starting to think so.
If Philly gives Harden the max this summer, did both teams lose the Harden-Simmons trade?
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah.
Because he's not that good anymore. And it seems like it just kind of randomly happened.
You know, at first I was thinking like the season, I was like, okay, you know, the fouling rules have changed. It's going to take him a little bit to get back to, you know, grow with that. So I know like a good amount of his points came from those kind of fouls. But I was like, he still should be a good shooter. And he's not. And then all the stuff about like the Nets players like not liking his work ethic and all that. And I'm like, well, like James Harden, he has the reputation, but like, of course, anytime someone gets traded, people, there are going to be rumors like that. But this is like the most believable case of like watching this guy play. And I'm like, I don't think he cares that much actually anymore.
Yeah. And I think I'm really curious, Adam, for your take on this. One thing I try to never do is really let a player changing affect like what I viewed him in the past. Of course, like you'll want to like look at it closely and say, okay, was this always the case? Was this not? But like if a guy gets good, that doesn't mean he was always good. He could have been bad, and the reverse is true. But this might be the most I've ever had my previous view of a player be changed by what happened later. Adam, I'm just kind of curious for your take on this. You're our guy who knows ball, here in the Full Court Mess extended universe. Opinion of James Harden in his prime changed from how crappy this year has been?
No.
Okay.
He was always kind of. He was like a good shooter because of the difficulty, but like just about average efficiency kind of everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And like we knew he was getting buoyed by his free throws, but like people were fouling him because he was drawing fouls. So like,
yeah,
that does count for something. So I don't know. It's just, he's what, 33 years old, like with a bad hamstring, it seems like, that just isn't getting better ever.
Yeah.
Where do you have him in your rough like rankings all time? Is there merit to he never could really get it done in the playoffs, or is that a tired argument used by still used by folks?
I don't know. He has a bunch of memorable chokes in the playoffs, but he also was the closest to taking out like the full strength Warriors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he doesn't have a great track record, but in most years, I think that team could have won a title. So, I don't know where I would begin to put him all time, though. I'm curious what you guys would just like off the top of your head.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really tough because, I mean, my ranking of him is still like his prime. I think his prime, he was still like a true threat to the league. I think he's really, really good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he earned all his fouls. You know, like, he was a threat and people fouled him. But I think, like, it's really interesting, too, because, yeah, he was, like, really the closest to getting Houston deep in the playoffs. But that's also where we've seen, like, some of his biggest losses, and like his poorest performance was also in the playoffs. Like, even though, like, also with being like a threat to the Warriors, he also had some of his worst performances to Warriors, and I wouldn't even say it's because like the Warriors shut him down. Like, it was just bad shooting sometimes.
No, I agree. I'm not, any team going up against James Harden, like, I don't think they truly fear him in the playoffs at this point. Like, they'll game everything, but like, yeah, his track record just isn't good in general.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the bad chokes and stuff stand out more than the good performances, but I'm sure it's still not good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with that. I mean, he's had crazy good performance, but the bad shit's always gonna be louder. I mean, everyone's convinced that Ben Simmons is a bad player now because he had a bad playoff series. When it's like, overall, if he plays again, he's pretty good.
I think the Nets can still say they won this trade based on, like, maybe next year. Although,
mm-hmm.
who knows with Ben Simmons getting back surgery suddenly.
Yeah.
He does have to play at some point for that scenario to be in play. but yeah, no, Harden's just fascinating because I think, and this is definitely like selfishly furthering my own agenda. But I think it's going to be really fascinating to look back and to really see what I think it'd be interesting to look back and compare like the careers of him and Russ. Because they are going to kind of end up the same, provided Philly doesn't go on an unbelievable run this year. Doesn't get that title. These are going to be two guys who like basically maximized production and got an MVP for their efforts and had some incredible statistical seasons, and then essentially weren't that big a deal in the playoffs, who were clearly excellent players. And so I'm just kind of curious, because to me it seems like, and this is where the bias comes in, because to me I'm like, I feel like Russ has that much more of a reputation. And Harden's thing was just more that he had the free throws. So I'm curious how that goes with age, but I'm sure Harden gets shit on all the time. But it is interesting to look back. I mean, this is just a few years removed from, is he like the best offensive player of all time, and better than, where does he rank with like Kobe and Wade? I would take him on my team over Kobe because he's, I don't know anything bad about him as a person. like, I would have him firmly. I would not really have him in that conversation anymore. I'd be like, but, and not in a, to me, not in a disrespectful way, I'd say this is a top 30, 35 player of all time. Which probably I don't,
where I would fall.
yeah, I don't think that should be able to be counted as disrespect, but I'm not like thinking about him and like probably the upper echelon ever again.
Right. I mean, there's also, you just like statistically, like if we go, you know, let's go back his best season scoring wise, he averaged 36 points a game, which
it's like absolutely
fucking nutty. That's fucking insane. And then, you know, for years before that, he was upper 20s. And this year with the Nets, he averaged 22 points a game. And then after the trade to the Sixers, 21 points per game. Like those numbers are falling.
Yeah. And like Jadon's point, yeah, he's definitely getting old, but that's the 36 points per game thing, I think, is like the perfect kind of reason of why I think it'll be him and, despite how much the fan bases hate each other, I think him and Russ will be very comparable in history, where they both did things that are, if you just say them on paper, you're like, or if you just like say the accomplishment, you go, that's impossible. You must have been one of the absolute best players of all time to pull that off. And then when you get the context, you're like, wow, you were still really good, but it wasn't really what it sounded like. Yeah, I was just curious. I think it's been interesting. I also had a note from another enemy of the pod, Jason Kidd, but I wanted us to cover it. Did y'all see Jason Kidd just shitting on Rudy Gobert?
Yes. My goodness. He didn't need to do it like that. Like, don't think that I'm a Gobert defender, because I'm not, but I was like very surprised about that.
Yeah, it doesn't usually happen, right? Like the coach of a team that eliminated a different team just going to the next round and being like, well, it's going to be a lot harder because they don't have shitty players like the team
let me find that quote, because that was
Well, it's funny. I don't think I've ever heard a player get called out by name by other players or coaches more than Rudy Gobert. Yeah. Just to specifically say,
oh,
like,
for sure. Yeah,
he doesn't scare us at all. We know you keep voting him Defensive Player of the Year, but like nobody can.
Clay did that like some games ago too, right before the postseason. He was like, yeah, you just get Gobert off you, and then I'm gonna make the shot. And like every time, I don't know what the Warriors, like what he said to them, but like every time they played against each other, they always talk shit after the game about Gobert. But here's the quote. Jason Kidd: our game plan against Utah isn't gonna work against the Suns. They can hurt you in the paint with JaVale and Ayton. This isn't Gobert or Whiteside. These guys can put the ball in the basket.
I mean, come on. He was like, he said, we have to deal with JaVale now. This isn't some crap like Gobert.
Right.
That is absurd.
And it's like, you know, JaVale's pretty good, but them being in the same conversation is crazy.
Yeah. Ayton is, I feel fine. Like, Ayton is definitely a better scoring big than Rudy Gobert. I don't think anything's controversial about that. But also, I mean, yeah, like, no, that's... And I'm not a Gobert guy, but you're like, come on, like these guys are playing with Chris Paul, and I don't really have a dog in the Gobert Donovan Mitchell fight. But wasn't that stat that like Donovan passes him the ball like twice a game?
He averages two passes to him a game in the regular season.
Like, had to be a typo when it first came out.
It doesn't seem possible, right? Like, you would get more than that on accident playing with somebody in a starting unit.
Yeah.
I literally don't understand how that's possible. But I'm definitely interested. Do y'all have takes on if you're Utah, which one you're keeping and which one you're shipping out?
Well, first, there is a tweet from Gobert 2 days ago that just says, every day has its own new rumor. And then a little eye rolling emoji, which is not, I don't know. That's, of course, he's gonna say that.
Was that the day that the reports came out that he was at the him or me point with Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah. Same day. Yeah, 2 days ago.
I mean, I think Rudy is probably a better player still than Donovan Mitchell, but I think you almost have to go with Donovan Mitchell if you're the Jazz going forward, if you really have to pick.
He's
younger by a good amount, right?
Yeah.
I think that's, for me, like, that'd be the reason. It's just, like, if you're getting rid of one of them, that means like you need to commit to kind of a soft rebuild, and you want, you know, some advantage age-wise.
I don't know what the Jazz do, because they're just so old all around. It's like, so, yeah, you can keep Donovan Mitchell, and then everyone else is like 37, and you don't really have many assets or anything. So anything other than it's like trying to really go for it now doesn't make a ton of sense either.
Right, yeah, because when now, you're right, it might have to be like a full rebuild. Which so, is gonna be really hard.
That given, do you give any credence to the idea that maybe they should just try to like freshen it up with a new coach and go back at it with the same squad?
That might be what I did if it were me making decisions, but I don't know that in the real world the players can mesh enough to do that, like off court. I mean, mm-hmm.
It seems like they hate each other.
I think there's some them
being like, sometimes they sit at the same table for lunch.
Yeah. Sometimes they sit at the same table for lunch. Sometimes in the playoffs, in desperate times, Donovan throws an alley-oop to Gobert, which is pretty much like sometimes they...
Which is the other thing about that stat. Like, he's 7 foot whatever with like the longest wingspan in the NBA. Like, if you're missing like 4 assists a game by just not throwing him easy.
Right. Yeah,
that's kind of what I'm confused by. And this shows I'm not paying enough. I'm paying the proper amount of attention to the Jazz. They're irrelevant. But I don't really understand how he doesn't average more points per game. Not even in the sense where I'm like, he has to do more. But is there a reason he doesn't get like 5 alley-oops a game just by default? Does he not roll to the basket, or is it literally just that Donovan will not pass him the ball? Like, who is that on?
I don't know, because like there are other guys that could be passing him the ball. You have Mike Conley, who can play make. You have Jordan Clarkson, who can pass also.
It's just like, if he can roll to the hoop at all, there's no excuse for him to just not be getting passes over the top like a number of times. Yeah. And I know like in the Dallas series, they did that for a while and he like somehow missed every dunk and it was hilarious.
Yeah. It must be a thing of just like, I think he really struggles to get around.
But that's odd given that like his movement for a guy his side is excellent on the defensive end. He can't roll to the hoop.
I mean, he also can't like run to the perimeter. He can't run out. I guess he can't run in either. I don't know. Like it's kind of fascinating.
It really is.
He should definitely average. He averaged 15 points a game this season. He definitely could get a few more. Yeah, I don't.
He is one that they like. They actively go away from him in high leverage situations, though.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not even like, oh, we're not going to go out of our way to throw him lobs. They're like, we're going to go out of our way not to pass him the ball.
Yeah, I mean, right. The amount of like screenshots where he's like posted up on like a 6 foot guard directly under the basket and doesn't get the ball is hysterical.
Right.
Well, that's like he's right. Really not a good post scorer, but like there are some cases where it's like he literally doesn't have to do, he can just turn around and place it in the basket. Yeah.
He doesn't have to jump. Like,
yeah. It's like the oops, like those late game oops they get to him, it's because like they're unexpected at this point. Which is sad.
I want to do a quick comparison because of what Jason Kidd said. Yeah, so Rudy was at between 15 and 16 points per game on 32 minutes a game this year. JaVale McGee scored 10 points a game on 16 minutes per game.
Wow.
JaVale McGee can definitely jump higher, they definitely attack the game with different mindsets. But that, I mean, it's either... Right. Like it has to either be like coaching or like people passing the ball. I don't see how that's possible. There's no way like Rudy doesn't want to score.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
But, I mean, I'm not a fan. I'm just fascinated. I agree with Adam. I think if you trade one of them, you have to trade Rudy. I think the fan base revolts if you trade Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you would message that, which is a stupid reason to, like, do a trade, but I really don't know how. Mitchell's their, like, savior. I think it's hilarious that the rumors that Gobert is already talking about Mitchell having waning explosiveness, because he's like...
And that was great.
That's pretty good. How is he,
like, declining? He's, like, 26 or something. He's like, it sucks that Donovan's getting worse every year. And I was like, what?
He's 25.
25, there you go.
I do think it's...
Yeah, he's...
He came into the league as one of his selling points was like, oh, he's a great defender. And then as a rookie, he was like a good defender. And now he's actually like one of the worst defenders in the NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. And I do have sympathy for Gobert on the defensive thing when they talk about like guards scoring in the paint, because it is, I know guard defense doesn't matter was a big deal for a while, but like you do actually have to like have guards that will try to keep their guy out of the paint. That matters. I watched that with John Wall and Bradley Beal for years. The bigs can literally do nothing if the guards just let people penetrate.
Yeah, definitely. But, let's say they do keep Gobert. Let's give a big congratulations to the Knicks for landing Donovan Mitchell.
It's the perfect pair.
It really is. And I hope they keep, actually it'd be easily funnier anyway, but it's guaranteed comedy whether it's Donovan Mitchell and Julius Randle or if it's Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert.
Right.
Go ahead, Adam.
The most disappointing team.
I'm also just now thinking that despite the fact that Donovan is way better, in terms of play style, he's basically like short RJ Barrett, which just means that, that Knicks team would have potential to be like the funniest of all time.
I mean, they consistently are, so.
Have you all seen the stuff that was done on RJ Barrett where, like, if you look at his overall percentages, he's a like an okay 3-point shooter, like I forget exactly, but like 36%-ish or something like that. But if you break it down, he never like shoots like 40% in a game. He only shoots like incredibly hot or misses everything. So like,
it's perfect.
His overall percentage is like a little below average, but like respectable looking. You're like, oh, that could get better. But he legit either goes like 7 of 8 from 3 in a game, and then he spends the next 10 games going like 1 of 5. And he never like finds, he never has such like a regular shooting game. And I'm like, how valuable is that actually? Because it's like, can you just pull him after he misses the first 2 threes? Because you know he doesn't have it today.
Honestly, that's like such a perfect guy to have with Julius Randle, who's like that, but inside.
Yeah. I thought that was fascinating.
What do the Knicks do this summer? What are they going to do? Because they,
I tuned them out, but the whole thing about their starters being horrific and their bench being good was hilarious this whole past year.
Yeah. I mean, Tibbs is going to go, right? Like, they're not going to move forward with him. I don't imagine. I mean,
you think, but shouldn't they have done it already?
I guess so. But they might be a team that like waits till the offseason so they don't look as stupid.
Like a good organization would just be like, all right, we know we're firing you. Goodbye. But like the Knicks might very well just like wait until halfway through the summer and then fire him for some reason.
Wait, I've got it. This could be actually a huge brain move. Leon Rose, he's the GM, right? In New York?
Yeah. Sounds right.
Leon Rose is waiting to fire him until Mark Jackson is off the market so that James Dolan cannot insist he hire.
Okay. Okay.
It's somewhat believable, I think.
That's
not too crazy.
You would have to GM that way if you were GMing under James Dolan. So I'm like, that very well could be the case. He's waiting for the worst candidates to get hired. And he's like, on God, if I fire him at the right time, maybe I'll get like Darvin Ham.
I think it would be funny if he fired him soon enough that Tibbs just immediately got another job. Like, could you honestly rule out the Lakers signing Tom Thibodeau if he was available?
No, right? I can't. I was just thinking that too. I was like, thinking
about it and what a great pair it would be with those guys.
No, it's too perfect. I want to see that Tibbs running these old ass dudes into the ground.
Tibbs throwing shots at LeBron every couple of games for not playing 38 minutes or something.
And the few young guys they have, they never play.
Career.
Tibbs single-handedly keeps LeBron from playing with his son or reaching Kareem's record.
Oh. This is...
Yeah, no. Speaking of LeBron, I wanted to give him a shout-out for his take that Ja Morant should not have been included in the most improved player talks because he's too good.
Okay. You can be too good to... You can improve too much, apparently.
What I yeah. He said, real bad. All right, here's the exact tweet. Ja's so damn tough. There's no way Ja should even have been in the most improved player talks. This guy's a flat-out star and always have been. Real basketball brains, no. Not the majority of dweebs who don't even watch basketball on those voting ballots. And that's what I've always said. Ja Morant has not improved since he's gotten in the league. I agree with LeBron on this one. He's the same guy he always has been. He's never gotten any better.
Okay.
I think the award is stupid.
It's a dumb award.
it's so inconsistent.
I love this confirmation that NBA players do actively view it as an insult. Mm-hmm. Like, we never knew for sure, but now we know. Like, they think it's an insult to be given most improved player.
I mean, Ja straight up gave his award to his teammate. Like, he left it at Desmond Bane's house. He's like, I left this in your kitchen.
Yeah, I don't want it.
Also, why are all the awards this year just, like, glass balls? All coaches have had...
Yeah, like,
I thought they used to be different trophies and stuff, and now they're all just, like, the same glass ball that... says good job in it or something.
It's the supply chain problems. What's the one that Kia doesn't sponsor?
The coach one.
The coach one. Okay, I got you. I was gonna say maybe it's because Kia has complete monopoly on these now that they're just they're like no, they want brand synergy. So all
the trophy is just straight up glass balls only. It's just straight up a Kia in your driveway.
Try and get in on the Coach of the Year sponsorship.
Yeah, it needs to be another car brand for sure. Like, it needs to be the Hyundai Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
So we can really get things heated.
It was really weird seeing how there's just one award Kia doesn't sponsor. And it's weird because, like, you know, like, who cares about all these sponsorships and stuff like that? But also it's like, almost seems disrespectful.
I want to know what like the negotiations were like. Like, is there a number where the Kia was just like, no, that's too much for Coach of the Year?
Like, yeah, Kia goes, okay, we're sponsoring every other award. Can you just throw in Coach of the Year for free? And NBA was like, no, that's going to cost like 10 grand. And they're like, oh, hell the fuck not. Absolutely no way. I'm not paying to give an award to Monty Williams.
Disrespectful.
That is Monty Williams rules.
He does. I think he's really good.
Yeah, like why would they not say that about most improved player? If that were...
Yeah, why are they desperate to give out sixth man of the year?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I want to give a shout out also to LeBron James for tweeting about Wiggins and Jordan Poole last night, and then I don't think they scored since then.
I was troubled by some, obviously I don't want to be a hater of joy, but obviously the Wiggins dunk was incredible. Mm-hmm. But I'm troubled by it because I saw someone say, if you're looking for the dunk of the playoffs, look no further. No, right after the Wiggins one. And we already saw what Ja did in round one.
That's
I'm sorry, the Wiggins one was dope, but it was not on the same level as
The Wiggins one was cool. It was very fun. That's the Ja round one is not being topped.
Yeah, I mean, come on, his like chest is above the rim in that one. The way he dunks is just so much cooler than everybody else.
Yeah, they're wrong, and they don't deserve that joy. See, Gary Payton, this is news as of 40 minutes ago that I missed. Gary Payton II is expected to miss approximately a month with a fractured left elbow.
So that is like, there any way the playoffs are still going on?
What, he would come back for like finals game 6 or something?
Probably, yeah. I think.
Because finals are like first week of June.
Yeah. Let me see. Finals NBA schedule. It starts on June 2nd. Today is the 4th. So, maybe, yeah.
But then you get the Jameer Nelson situation. If you can make it to the finals without him, do you really play him in the finals? Coming off an injury.
I think they would. I think Kerr would do that.
Is he actually that important to the Warriors, in your opinion, Jared? Because I thought for a while he had kind of like fallen out of their rotation again.
I mean, thing is, like, Kerr's rotations this year have been insanely fluid. Because, like, we won't see Damian Lee play for like 3 weeks, and then like all of a sudden there's a game and he's getting first quarter minutes while everyone's healthy. I think he's been pretty important, but I think Kerr uses him in a way that's like, if there's a game where the biggest threat is a big man, Gary's gonna get less minutes because he wants to know more big men. But if there's like for Memphis, Gary was starting for the series because he wanted to throw him at Ja. So I think like, at least in games that are way more guard heavy, I think he's been actually like really good. Like, his defense is like, it reminds me of Marcus Smart. Not as good, but like, it's very like, he goes out there and he plays defense and he's going to get like 2 or 3 steals if he's getting like 20 minutes. Can we win without him? Yeah, I think so, but I think it does make some things more difficult, for sure.
Where are you at with that series now that it's 1-1 and both games have been pretty close?
Yeah, those were tough. I think they can do it. The first game was away. First two games were away, so we have one away win. Now two home games next. I think they can do it. Also, like, Draymond's minutes have been incredibly inconsistent, considering he left game one early. He missed a good chunk of time in game two after needing stitches. So, like, I want to see what a game looks like where he's actually playing the whole game. I think it can do it. I do think that it could be, like, 7 games because the Grizzlies are scary. And also, like, the Warriors have such that, like, that run-and-gun game plan, and I think the Grizzlies are the best team that can keep up with that because they're so young and like they play like college kids.
I've been kind of surprised. I didn't expect the Grizzlies to be this competitive with the Warriors, honestly.
Yeah. I think really what will be the cause of, like, if they lose the series, part of that is just going to be an experience.
I appreciate that the NBA staggered it to give us some nights off where they put both of the good, compelling series on the same night.
I do appreciate that.
Really, Miami and Suns, Mavs, which look like funerals, on the other, and I can just take those nights off. I think Phoenix started this game up 12-2 on the Mavericks.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm I'm surprised the Mavericks did so well this season also. And also, like, I, even though they had a better record, I did expect them to lose to the Jazz.
I kind of expected. The Jazz just felt like they were imploding. So I kind of expected
that's
the
fair.
Jazz to lose that yeah. series more than the Mavs to even win it.
Yeah, exactly. True. Not a, thought the Mavs would win, but not a statement at all on the Mavs.
Right. Our last low post pod with Zach Lowe talking to Tim McMahon, like both of them even said they don't think the Jazz, I mean the Mavericks, necessarily expected this after trading Kristaps Porzingis. Like they don't think they made that trade with the intention of like this is a win now move and Spencer Dinwiddie is going to be huge for us and like so they might have just kind of stumbled into this when really planning for the future, but
hey, that's on them. You got to expect if you're trading with the Washington Wizards to come out on top. Unless you are Rob Pelinka.
What do you think is a good example of like the best in recent memory, let's say like last 20 years, accidentally positive season for a team?
I forget what actual year it was, but the Goran Dragic Suns year where like everyone thought they were going to be terrible and then they won like 40 some odd games with this
that's
completely random team and then decided like, oh, we're here, we're going to go for it now. And then that just sent the Suns spiraling for like basically until they got Chris Paul.
Yeah, literally that's my first one. Thought was the triple point guard Suns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Got any others?
Not that they were like expected to be bad in the same way, but probably deserve a shout out for the Isaiah Thomas Celtics.
Okay.
Because no one had him as being fifth in MVP voting coming into that year.
That's very fair.
So that's pretty cool. 60 win Hawks also kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think anyone before the season was afraid of Jeff Teague, Damari Carroll, and the others. But those definitely the absolute first one I thought of was the 3-point guard Suns.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Any others? That's pretty much it, huh?
Yeah.
Where is Isaiah now? I forget. He was on a bunch of teams.
Had a time with some time with like the Lakers this year, didn't he?
I think like a week or two.
Okay.
I don't think that's the last place he was at. No,
he was in. Wasn't he in Denver again too? And like the Pelicans.
He was.
He was on the Charlotte Hornets, maybe.
Oh, I think that's right. I think it was the Hornets.
Yeah, he's still on the Hornets. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
last surprise good team I'll throw in, or at least Wikipedia says he is. That's all I can offer. Last surprise good team I'll throw in is the Clippers, the Pat Bev Clippers right before Kawhi went there.
Mm, fair.
They were just kind of random. And it basically led to them getting Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, so worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that hasn't really worked out that much, but you know what I mean?
In theory, it worked out.
Yeah.
What we've seen is kind of the Suns
last year to like the degree that they were good. Like even all people were like, this is like maybe 7-8 seed. Like there were people saying they wouldn't make the playoffs still. And I mean, they almost won the championship.
To that point, you can basically pick any recent Chris Paul team because the Chris Paul Thunder.
Yeah.
It's somehow, even at his big age, it's pretty much a guarantee if you put Chris Paul on a team, they're going to be good, which is wild.
Pretty wild. Yeah, the Thunder thing was so funny, though, because they're like, man, we're trying to tank. Get out.
They're
like,
what the fuck is this, man? Did you just make us make the playoffs?
You made us too good.
They're pissed. They couldn't have got him out of there fast enough.
Yeah.
Anything else going on? that we've missed?
I think it's pretty good coverage.
Okay. Adam, you got any other stuff you'd like to discuss in regards to basketball? Or not. Anything goes at this hour.
I'm just curious, if both of you had to pick right now, who would you pick to win the championship at this point?
I promise I'm not doing this as a reverse jinx, but I'd take the Celtics.
That's a reverse jinx. You can
it might end up being one, but that's not my intent. That I'm full on in. I fear that they will win it all. Right, I have Phoenix right there with them, considering Booker's now back.
I think it's just whoever wins Bucks Celtics.
Which is
kind of cheap because I'm picking two teams, but
is Middleton supposed to be back like maybe next series if they advance, or is he?
Yeah,
I thought he was out like a little longer than that, which is why I kind of stopped paying attention to him to the Bucks as much. But let me see.
I think it was at least for this series. Yeah, I'm checking too.
Also, I'm curious, just while we're on the Bucks, I saw the thing today where I think it was Kendrick Perkins or Stephen A. Smith. Now, Stephen A. Smith said he was not ready to call Giannis the best player in the world. And all I could think of is, if you say that, who do you think he thinks the best player in the world is? Because there's no way anyone who's like, I'm not ready to call Giannis the best yet is like, but it's I not, am ready to call Jokic the best. Like,
yeah.
Who does he think is?
I mean, I think the other one people argue for is Kevin Durant.
Oh, okay.
But would Perkins say that?
I do think it was Stephen A. Smith. But you know, Stephen A. Smith and KD got beef too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess I don't. Yeah, there has been an update that I can see. Other than. Says Sham said recovery of grade 2 MCL places potential conference finals in jeopardy for Middleton.
That just seems like too much. I don't know how they get past the Celtics without
Chris.
I'm
still nervous about this series, but I don't think the Bucks could win a championship if Chris Middleton is like gonna be hobbled coming back and maybe not even until halfway through next round or later. So I'm gonna kind of hedge on Jared's answer and say just either Suns or Celtics. And if the Celtics lose this series, then I don't think the Bucks or the Heat have any chance.
Give me the Western Conference if the Celtics are not the ones coming out of the East.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's say the Suns somehow lose. And the Celtics somehow lose. What are the finals looking like?
I'd probably take the Warriors over anyone at that point.
Yeah. My one caveat is if Embiid comes back and is able to somehow get them past Miami with this 2-0 hole. Uh-huh. If Embiid can, like, this is a huge cop-out, but if Embiid can actually get the Sixers to the finals, then I assume they'll win because that means he's doing, like, 40 and 30 a game or something.
Right.
But I am operating on the assumption now that they're not getting past Miami. I don't believe in I don't know, it's tough. If the Bucks get to the finals, I don't want to bet against Giannis, but I would really take whoever came out of the West to they get to, who gets to the finals, unless the Celtics are their opponent.
That's fair.
I think the Celtics are almost an accidentally good team. I don't think they expected to be this year.
Especially seeing the first half of the season. Yeah.
It just meshed perfectly. I mean, and I know it's cliche, but there is really is something to peaking at the right time, and they did.
That's definitely true. And then, And getting rid of Dennis Schroeder really goes a long way.
It's all, it's, any team who wants to win a title should make sure they acquire and get rid of Dennis Schroeder in the same year.
Yeah. Yeah, part of it is definitely you have to go through both motions.
All right, you guys want to wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up. I guess we'll probably be back next week with more basketball talk.
Mm-hmm. Things might have changed by then. They might not have.
Well, let's say, what's a fun thing we can end on? Wait, there's got to be a... Let me do some scrolling real quick. I'm sure there is... Okay. How many big men do we predict will be on the Magic roster next year to start the season? I'm saying 9.
I think that's definitely where you got to set the over under. Have they ever actually changed the GM away from being that length fetishist?
Not that I know of.
While we're on the topic real quick, does Jonathan Isaac exist anymore?
No, he's gone.
What? I genuinely don't know what happened. People just stopped ever even like mentioning him.
Like, he became such an insane Republican that he is no longer in the cultural zeitgeist.
And he averaged 11 points this season.
Year.
Isaac is legit. The only guy on Isaac's level right now, I think, is Enos. And but it is fascinating because Jonathan Isaac is actually a good player.
Yes. He's also, I believe, their second highest paid guy.
Fascinating.
Is he?
Behind. $17 million this year behind Gary Harris's $20 million.
Oh, I was going to say, I cannot for the life of me guess who their highest paid guy is if you tell me he's second.
That the top three is Gary Harris, 20, Jonathan Isaac, 17, and then Markel Fultz, 16. Fultz.
I knew Fultz would be right after Isaac. I had no clue who first was, but I couldn't have even told you Gary Harris was on the Magic.
I am counting how many bigs they have right now.
They're going to run out Gary Harris, Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony, and everyone else is at least a quasi-big.
They have at least 7 bigs. It's not in counting like the small forwards that like listed as false more, but they play big. That's yeah. So the over under, you want to say 9?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's end it on this then. You guys saw the Enes Kanter post, right? With the CIA.
Oh yeah.
Incredible. Like we joked that they're friends. They're friends. Incredible. Or retweeted or something. I don't know. Okay. Everybody, please remember that we love you.
Thank you very much.